As we know, famous composers can cast long shadows. The attention paid to Palestrina in the four centuries since his death has meant the neglect of a substantial group of composers who were his contemporaries, or part of the following generation. If noted at all, they are lumped together as the Roman school and assumed, though very little of their music has actually been heard, to have continued to write in the conservative style of Palestrina's masses. And yet the 40 or so years between 1580 and 1620 saw a huge expansion in Roman musical activity and a consequent explosion of composition by native Italians attracted to the city. Each of these composers was an individual, and while much of their music did continue to develop the style of the later Palestrina, they also began to explore the new ground opened up, for example, by the advent of the basso continuo. This is certainly true of the Anerio brothers, Felice and Giovanni Francesco, born in the 1560s into a Roman musical family. Their father, Maurizio, was a trombone player, and the music presented here should help make us aware of the riches waiting to be discovered in the works of these composers. Giovanni Francesco Anerio is probably the better known of the two brothers, particularly for his masses, which include a Missa la Battaglia and a rearrangement for four voices of Palestrina's six-voice Missa Pape Marcelli, as well as the Missa pro Defunctus. He was born in Rome in about 1567, and after a musical education took minor orders. He was active as a singer and maestro in various Roman churches, culminating at Santa Maria dei Monti from 1613 to 1620. He was ordained to the priesthood in 1616, his first mass at the Church of the Gesù being a very grand occasion, with music for eight choirs in which many of Rome's singers and musicians took part. In about 1624, he left Rome for Poland, where he was one of a number of Italians to serve as maestro to King Sigismund III. He died on his way back to Rome in 1630. His Missa pro Defunctis, published in 1614, is one of an increasing number of such settings found in the late 16th century Rome and Spain. Each sets a different combination of movements from the ordinary and proper, but Anerio is unusual in including the sequence Dies Irae. His sense of balance causes Anerio to end the work not with the hellfire of the Libera Me, but with a calm and beautifully judged setting of the plea for mercy, Kyrie Eleison. Plain song pervades the work, but often in very subtle ways, and the setting of the third Agnus Dei is especially poignant. Words of Noel O'Regan for the Hyperion label. We'll have a rare chance to hear music by Giovanni Francesco Anerio this week, featuring the esteemed a cappella vocal ensemble, the Lyric Consort, with members of the Bloomsburg University Concert Choir under the direction of Dr. Alan Baker, professor of choral and vocal music at Bloomsburg University. This Wednesday evening, March 21st, at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Bloomsburg, with the Reverend Dr. Howell Sasser, rector of St. Paul's, officiating. There will also be a performance of the Mass by the Lyric Consort at St. Luke's Church in Scranton this Saturday, March 24th. Father Sasser and Dr. Baker paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the music and the occasion for its presentation. Father Sasser.
We had a grant from the Episcopal Church a couple of years ago to do some events with students. And I figured the way that I could draw them in best was to give them something completely outside their experience. And so through a series of things that were on a much smaller scale than this, I gave them new experiences of being in church or of singing or of reading or whatever they were going to do. And this was kind of the last thing that took on a life of its own and got way out of scale last year. And we're very pleased to be able to do it again.
And you two know each other how?
Well, this is St. Paul's Episcopal in Bloomsburg, right on the main drag. It's one of the best acoustical, you know, venues in Bloomsburg. And so I bring the choir there, the Bloomsburg Choir, every September after just a couple of weeks of rehearsal. We go down and sing a service because it's a lovely acoustic, and then they like big picnic afterwards. It's just lots of fun. And then we've had some other a cappella events, again, because the venue it's really centrally located, and it's just a beautiful space for a cappella music, and especially for early music.
How did you decide on what music to feature?
I told Ellen I wanted a mass. Last year it happened that it worked out to be on the 25th of March, which is the Feast of the Annunciation, so it was logical to do one that was on that theme. This year it didn't work out that the dates were so good, but Ellen came up with a good Requiem mass that was accessible. I think a lot of it has to do with what voices can he get, how can we manage to put it together with what we have and what he has, with the time of the year and with what the community will find interesting.
And so, Alan, what did you offer this year?
I picked a Requiem setting by Giovanni Francisco Anerio. There are actually two. There's a Felice, they were brothers, and these are late 1500s, early 1600s in Rome. Contemporary, really, with Palestrina and a little bit later, and Palestrina's legacy, because it's kind of obliterated these composers, and they're not as well-known probably as they should. So we have a Requiem by the younger brother, which is Giovanni Francesco, which he published in 1614. You know, this is music that, it's not like a concert Requiem like Verdi or Mozart. This is music that was actually written for service. That's one of the more interesting things about this project, is it presents this music in kind of its original historical context as service music. And so people can come to hear it just out of purely musical interest or historical interest, or they can also, you know, be there and participate as a worship service. So it really kind of has about a three-pronged approach.
And from my biased perspective, I'll admit, I think it's better to see it in the context that it was originally intended for. I mean, you can see clothes lying out on a table, but they don't mean anything until they're on a person. Once they're hanging on the person, you see how they hang. You see what the spaces are between the music. You see what the music was intended for. And you see, in a sense, what the emotional valence was intended to be in the music. So by doing it in the context of an actual mass, as close as we can get, because in fact it should all be in Latin, there should be dozens of people running around doing parts that they've been doing for years and know perfectly. We won't be able to do that. But to see it with the visual element, to see it with the incense, with the candles, with the cenotaph, the fake coffin in the aisle with the black drape over it, it gives you an idea of what the people in that time wanted or expected when they came into that sort of experience.
Have you had an experience in Europe, anything like this?
Oh, yes. So I've been in these sorts of services. I wish I had paid more attention when I was younger to know more what I was doing. But yeah, it's a very powerful thing when it all comes together and all the pieces feed off of each other.
And you just expressed, we're hearing, we're smelling, we're seeing. So the senses are involved in many ways.
Yeah, last year, they could barely see the altar from the back of the church by the end from all the incense, so... Yes, we're aiming for that again this year.
And Alan, what will we notice about the music?
I mean, he sets a lot of the normal parts that people would set. The most interesting part of this piece, I think, is probably the Dies Irae, which generally at this time was not set to polyphony. It was simply been chanted, and he set the even-numbered verses in harmony. So you get a verse chanted, and then you get a verse in harmony. And he's kind of on the cusp of the Baroque period, and some of his music, not this music, but some of his other music, he played around with the idea of using a basso continuo, you know, organ, cello kind of accompaniment, so he could use solo voices, different combinations of voices. He dictates very specifically which voice parts are supposed to sing these verses of the Dies Irae, and he moves it around between the sopranos and the altos, the tenors and the basses. And it's pretty dramatic. Parts of it, I would say, we might locate somewhere between Palestrina and like Gesualdo. He's writing harmonically in a way that someone like Palestrina didn't, where there was a kind of a linear approach to the music. He's taking some chances with the vertical harmonies, and sometimes it's pretty interesting. But I think the Dies Irae is probably the most interesting part of the piece.
Will you be addressing the congregation, the audience, in any way as part of the service?
Well, at that time, there would have been no homily in the Mass. It was considered to be extraneous. It was done at a separate time, even on a separate day. So it would have proceeded just as it is in the book. Now, because it's so far from our experience, what I've done is make up a booklet that has all the text in English as well as the text in Latin, and then a guide to what's happening, instructions, read the book and know what's happening up in the front, because you wouldn't necessarily know. So it kind of replaces anything that I would say about the purpose of the occasion. And obviously our theology has changed somewhat in the last 400 years, so it isn't exactly what we would have done at the time, or we certainly wouldn't do this sort of thing now in exactly the same way. But I should add that it really is intended to be an occasion of comfort. The Mass is always intended for the living, even though it's called a Mass for the dead. The whole point is to reassure the living that the souls of the dead are with God in heaven, that in fact there is comfort, and that we also are supposed to look forward to that comfort ourselves. So although in later Masses we get sort of the dramatic Verdi trumpets talking about a day of weeping and all this business, I think the overall effect of it is to give people a much greater sense of comfort.
And appropriate in that way for Lent, taking hope in the fact that, yes, we have to go through the valley of darkness and death, but that there is hope.
Yes, exactly. Just as we come around the corner to Holy Week, it's a good thing to be thinking about.
And Alan, tell us about the forces then we'll hear.
Well, it's the Lyric Consort, and we're going to be joined by 6 members of the Bloomsburg University Concert Choir to create a choir of 14, which will really fill up the space, I think, and a great experience, I think, for those students to sing this beautiful music and to sing it with some older folks who do it a lot, like the Lyric Consort, and then to put it in this context. And, you know, a lot of times they take these classes, you know, they take a music appreciation class or a music history class, and you try to explain this idea of the service and how this music fit in. It's so much easier to just do it.
You said this was really something that took on a life of its own. What did you hear after last year from your parishioners or people who were in attendance?
The main reaction was wow, because it's not something that we ever see otherwise. I mean, to bring in a group of very skilled singers into a space that was built before amplification, so it was really intended to be acoustically well-designed, and have them make good use of it is a dramatic thing. And then to have all the pieces come together, the things that we see every week, because we do church in a certain way, and some of those pieces come into this as well. And then to see the church full of people whom we otherwise would never have seen, who come in because they love the music, because they love sacred music, is very gratifying.
It was crazy. Wednesday night, 6 p.m., full church to hear a Renaissance Mass.
I suppose you get a sense, each of you, that people are hungry for nourishment in a way that something like this can provide sometimes, don't you think?
I think that you can only do so much with CDs and the internet. Sooner or later, you have to have a real person. And live music is so rare these days, good live music, that you have to take the opportunities when you find them.
Now, Alan, will we get a chance to hear this music in any other context?
Yes, on the Saturday, the 24th at 8 p.m., Lyric Consort will sing the entire Requiem in more of a concert style, no service. We'll be adding some other pieces, you know, to fill some of those voids. So we'll be doing some other motets, kind of Lenten appropriate Renaissance. So it's an all a cappella, all Renaissance program, with this Anario Requiem as the featured piece, but also some motets by Palestrina and by Thomas Tallis, and a couple of really fantastic pieces by Thomas Tompkins, this English Renaissance composer, somewhat contemporary, I think, with Anario, is When David Heard That Absalom Was Slain. It's really not a motet. I think it's considered to be a sacred madrigal, but that's a fine distinction. But then a fantastic Tompkins piece that everyone should hear called Woe Is Me. The text is, Woe is me, for I am constrained to dwell with Mesek and to have my habitation in the tents of Kedar. And it is just a stunning motet. And some Gregorian chant as well we'll be tossing into that evening.
And where will that be, Alan?
That will be at St. Luke's in downtown Scranton, kind of our home.
Lyric tends to do a Lenten program. You often program something at this time of year, meditative and...
Yes, yeah, it's kind of been our tradition. You know, we're performing in these sacred spaces, and you want to be sensitive, especially, I think, this time of year. And I think there is a desire on people to, you know, it's Lent, and that kind of a, you know, we're searching for those kinds of maybe intense or personal spiritual experiences, and that's what a program like this can bring, because it's not one that people are going to respond to with, you know, whoops and cheers and bravos and, you know, let's hoot and holler.
Again, remind people why they might want to try it.
It's a rare opportunity to see a full-scale Renaissance Mass. There's dinner to follow, so if you need to be fed in multiple ways, we'll take care of that. Parking is relatively easy in Bloomsburg these days, and the church is easy to get into, easy to get out of. It's not a difficult place to get around, so please come and don't feel hesitant at all about coming out on a weeknight.
The Reverend Dr. Howell Sasser, rector of St. Paul's in Bloomsburg, and Dr. Alan Baker, professor of choral and vocal music at Bloomsburg University, speaking with us about the Missa pro Defunctis, a Renaissance Requiem Mass by Giovanni Francesco Anerio that will be presented by members of the Lyric Consort and the Bloomsburg University Concert Choir under Dr. Baker's direction, with Father Sasser officiating at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, Main and Iron Streets in downtown Bloomsburg, this Wednesday, March 21st, at 6 in the evening. Admission is free, but donations are welcome. And that's a rare chance to hear this Anerio Mass. And it's St. Paul's Episcopal Church, Main and Iron Streets in Bloomsburg, Wednesday, March 21st, at 6, with members of the Lyric Consort and the Bloomsburg University Concert Choir, under the direction of Dr. Alan Baker, and the Reverend Dr. Howell Sasser, rector of St. Paul's, will be officiating. And then there will be a chance to hear the Mass in a more concert-like setting as the Lyric Consort presents a Lenten musical meditation this Saturday night at 8 in St. Luke's Episcopal Church, Wyoming Avenue in Scranton. The program will feature Renaissance music, including the Anerio Mass, as well as pieces by Palestrina, Thomas Tallis, Thomas Tompkins, and Gregorian chants as well. For more information on the web, lyricconsort.com, lyricconsort.com, or exchangearts.org, exchangearts.org.